John here, everyone, for the Worst Comic Podcast Ever. At the inaugural year of Empower Comic-Con, I was able to host the panel for actress Gigi Edgley. Gigi is an award-winning actress, recording artist, creator of original comic books, director, and producer. She's most well-known to fans for her portrayal of the fan-favorite character Chiana on the sci-fi show Farscape and the miniseries Farscape: The Peacekeeper Wars. Her connection with the Jim Henson Company continued as host of Jim Henson's Creature Shop Challenge. She's also been nominated for the Film Critics Circle Award for Best Lead Actress in the feature Last Train to Frio, the Sci-Fi Genre Award for Best Supporting Actress, the Saturn Award for Best Supporting Actress in a Television Series, and a Maxim Award for Sexiest Space Babe. Her list of television, movie, and theater credits are far too lengthy to list here, although she recently completed shooting Hashtag, a short sci-fi film that was successfully funded through a Kickstarter campaign. I also want to thank Gigi especially because she was suffering from a cold, and she was able to battle through it for this panel and to meet her fans. Then I want to say thank you to Gigi, all the folks at Empower Comic Con for making this possible, and for allowing the Worst Comic Podcast Ever to moderate her panel.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening.
I love coming to these beautiful conventions, and I love meeting you. It's been such a pleasure and a blessing to live this awesome life. You know, you guys have supported me every step of the way and believed in the dream and my heart song. So I'm so grateful and forever humbled to you guys, and I always like to say that one-on-one, because it's a very special process when I get an opportunity to meet you one-on-one. And there's not many other opportunities for actresses, unless you are in the sci-fi world, to actually meet people that have watched you and supported you. So thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Maybe tell us a little bit about how you got into theater, how you got into acting.
When I was growing up, I never really fit in anywhere, and my mum actually always said that I was quite unique, to put it politely. She said, "You're always off in a corner in your imaginary world, that all the kids would be playing together and you'd always be playing with the fairies or the unicorns or the mermaids or the who knows what."
They have those in Australia too, don't
yes.
they? Here's for the
in between the convicts and the rapists, there's definitely the... No, just kidding.
Stray unicorn.
I think, I've just always felt very safe in a make-believe world. And then growing up through school, again, I was sort of kept to myself, and I found community theatre, and I found that when I was a character or playing as someone from my imagination, I felt like I had a cool story to tell, and it was a safe place for me. So my very first paid job was when I think I was around 13, and it was playing Sarah Wayborn in a beautiful theatre production called Picnic at Hanging Rock. And so that was, I auditioned, and my dad, the gentleman who worked as my dad's assistant, had to drive me an hour every night to the theatre after I finished school, and on the weekends, and an hour back. And this was like, I'm like, oh my God, I've made it. I am a star. Like, this is, and I would start to sit in the back seat. He's like, "Not yet, kiddo, get in the front seat," you know, and I'd be like, not wanting to do my homework, because who needs to do homework if you're a famous actress? And he's like, "Do your homework." And I'm like, eh. So from that, like, it sort of progressed to a little television job. My first like crappy television job was like, I had no idea what I was doing, and I was terrified. And I played a girl in a bikini, of course, on a show called Paradise Beach. And I won a date with the main guy, and I had like two lines that I mucked up every take. Like, I was a mess. I was so nervous when I went. And I thought, I'm never going to do this again. I hate it. And then sure enough, I ended up auditioning for a university where there was about 800-ish kids that auditioned for it, and managed to score one of the 12 positions and earn a Bachelor of Arts. But they also trained you practically as well as theoretically. So they brought in the Boston Shakespearean Company. We did yoga, we did acting, we did singing, we did dance, we did movement, whatever else. And then we also did the theoretical subjects, so we had the degree. And then from that, it just sort of progressed one thing to the next quite nicely. So it's been a beautiful journey, a very nice journey. There's definitely been a lot of very abundant times, and I think it's good for you guys to know that also there's been a lot of times where I think I've had a very good run, but there's definitely been some quiet times where you, I know a lot of other people in my position wait for the agent to call and do that stuff, which is totally cool because that's the journey that they're taking. But I'm not very good at sitting still, as you can see with Chiana. So I make my own projects. So I record music, or I write comic books, or I directed my own film because I just want to keep creating and keep telling new stories. If I'm not focusing my energy on something, I'll explode.
Now, I read that you've done, do you like doing stunts? You talked about kind of the physical aspect of Chiana, and I saw, when I was doing some research, I saw stunts in martial arts under things that you have. Is that something you enjoy doing?
Love it, because it's so cool, because with Farscape, she was like a crazy character. And everything that I've watched, like when I was a kid, I was obsessed with the Dark Crystal, obsessed. Like I can't even tell you how many times I've watched that film. And it's so surreal to me. Like throughout my life, there's always been these weird moments that it's almost like an alternate reality. You know, if I could go back to that little kid, that little girl that I was, that was like, you know, watched it over and over and over again and go, hey, little girl, you're going to actually be working with these people one day and living with these Henson creatures. You know, it's insane how life works out. And I'm very, again, grateful. So when I got Chiana, I looked at the description, and it, you know, there was nothing about the movement or anything, and I didn't know that there was going to be that extensive makeup. It wasn't on in Australia yet, and they said, you know, she's a runaway. She's manipulates everyone. She's, you know, she's a minx, and she'll destroy anyone to get what she wants. And I went, well, the best way to do that, because the obvious way would be to be a real, you know, I don't know how to put it politely, be a real nasty character. And I went, well, if you just make her not so nasty and you want to kind of fall in love with her and then she goes in for the kill, yee! So that's sort of where she came from for me. And I went through like 5 different rounds of auditions. Then I had like costume fittings. Then they fitted me for the eyes. They fitted me for teeth as well. You can see online there's actually a makeup test, and they put these horrible fangs, and it made me look like a rat. If you look on the side, I'm like, and I kept dribbling and I was lisping. And they're like, okay, lose the teeth. Those contact lenses were so beautiful. Like, they're great. I was very fortunate with that because they were big black eyes. You kind of fell into Chiana. And I'd actually have big conversations with Zan, and she had challenges with her lenses because she felt that because they're locked, then you don't realise when you're speaking to people that your pupils are dilating and they're moving and they're reacting to every heartbeat, to every word, to every instinct that the other person's, you know, making you feel. So we'd have big chats about that. And my first makeup test went for about 5 hours. And then I realised, oh, my gosh. Because when I went into my audition, I went, well, how do you make her an alien? Like, I know, like, you know, I could speak differently or whatever, or I could do weird movements. And the guy's like, look, just act. And I was like, okay. So did the scene and stuff. And then when I was dressed as her, because I wanted to create a cool Henson character. Like, you look at every single character that they've concocted is complex and unbelievably believable and intricate, and they're not just a person in a mask. You know, you do believe that they are the fairy or the alien or whatever. So when I saw the very, very final look of Chiana, like, I just had a moment with her to meet her properly, and I saw myself in like a full-length mirror on the back of the door, and I just looked at this creature looking back at me, and I was like, ooh, hello, and started mucking around with just slight little things and stuff. And I'm thinking, how do you play an alien that's not over the top, you know, that you want to kind of believe, but you wanted to look alien? And I thought, if she just breathes everyone in and really watches, and every now and then you meet someone that talks to you and they look inside your soul, you know, and it's quite unnerving. I'm like, okay, that's what we want from this creature. So that's where she sort of came about, and it was only meant to be one episode. So I think if I knew that I was doing those crazy movements for like 5 years, I would have chosen a different direction. But that's, yeah, how she came about.
Yeah, she kind of has this almost feral kind of cat sort of quality. Yeah. I mean, and I, as a person who has cats, they do that. You think, oh, sweet kitty, and you go to pet, and then,
yeah, exactly.
And then, right, exactly. You fool, oh. You pulled in.
And so all the stunts and stuff, like when I signed on to do it, I said, look, can you train me up? Because they were so cool. Like they let us, I said, I want to do as much of the fighting as I can. I wanted to be more hands-on. If there's a situation where I pull out a gun, can I instead whack someone across the face, because I want to be, you know, a dirty fighter, because she's been brought up like that. You know, she's lived on the outskirts of the cosmos, and I wanted to fight like that. And they were so cool about it. So they trained me up as best as they could. And you're so exhausted. The days were so long, like 16-hour days. And then I'd go to my trainer, and he looked at me like just a limp biscuit, you know, kind of thing. And it was awesome, the wire work, all that stuff. Crazy and so beautiful that they trust you to do those insane stunts. You know, a few times I worked on a show called Rescue Special Ops, and for a month before, they threw us off the cliffs of Sydney and abseiled and rock climbed, and you know, taught us all the medical lingo, and that was insane. Like we did a awesome shot. There's a tower called the Sydney Tower, which is the tallest tower in Sydney. And one of the very first episodes was me hanging off the side of it, because my rescue character goes to try and catch this adrenaline junkie who jumps off, base jumps off the side. And I struggle with him and go to catch him kind of thing, and I end up hanging off the side of the building. So, like, that kind of stuff is insane. And you can't – you have to do your best to try and act like you're not terrified. You know, with that one I could be terrified, but there was another sequence where – I was rescuing a person that was pushed down a storm drain, and it's actually something that people do in Australia. They adrenaline junkies, they go underneath the city, and they, when flash floods happen and stuff, they surf the storm drains. They don't realise that the council has put up grids, and if that's there, they'll die, because the water rises that high, they can't get out, and the force of the water pushes them against the drain. So there was a sequence in that same episode where I chased the crazy guy, you know, down the stormwater drain. There's a flood. Pardon me. There's a flood. And the water is rising and rising and rising, and it was actually probably the most scariest stunt I've ever done, because you couldn't move. Even though we set it up in a – it was actually at an Olympic park where people train kayaking and stuff like that. But the stunt guy would have to drop me in, and at the end of the take, he'd pull me out by the scruff of my neck, because I couldn't – the force of the water was that intense, because we were leaning up against the drain. The other actor was there. And then the stunties are standing up above us, and the water's just gushing, gushing, gushing through like this. And then the other star of the show comes down to save us, to try and – he abseils on the other side. Anyway, so the director's like, more water. It doesn't look scary enough. More water. And I'm like, frill, put it very politely. And they're like, Gigi, you meant to be rescuing the guy. You look terrified. I'm like – I am terrified. It was insane. It was crazy. And strangely enough, one of the guys, it was the lead guy and the guy that played his brother. And when he was abseiling down, his harness actually caught him in an extremely uncomfortable spot. And he had to, pardon me, be taken off the side of set to be repaired by the nurse. I'm like, oh, my goodness, I don't even want to look at that repair job. And meanwhile, we're still there with the water flooding. I'm like, hurry up! So it was crazy, but so much fun.
Now, I find it interesting because on Farscape, obviously he's not hearing their actual voices. He's hearing the translated voices with the translator microbe things, whatever.
Yes, thank you.
And so when he... So when we hear Erin Sun speak, she's got an English accent. And I kind of thought it was weird that Chiana, like, you've got an – she's an alien. Like, she could have any accent you want. Why not just give her an Australian – why just have her have an accent that's Australian?
It was a constant battle, because originally in the very first episode, I auditioned with American, or as best as I knew how to at that stage of being the old age of 22. And to me, she was definitely like, she's more like American to me is sexy because it's something foreign to me.
That's so weird.
You know, and I couldn't imagine her Australian. Like, it just she's rough, you know, she's rough, but she's kind of sexy rough, you know. And anyway, so I did 3 days American, and then that's, I think, the point where they were like, this chick might stick around. They had Ben, who was American, Claudia, who was sounded very English. And they didn't really have any Aussies at that time. Dargo was very well spoken. Mm-hmm. Zan was a little bit Aussie, but still quite well spoken. Mm-hmm. So the Australian producer called me up and he goes, I want you to be Australian. And I said, but I bet she's her. Chiano, she's more American than Australian. They're like, no, we need to sell. It also needs to be, you know, we've got to sell this to Australia. We've got to sell this to everywhere. And I'm like, okay, well, this is really weird because it's a big part of your character. And then so the next day I went home and burst into tears. I went, they hate me, I hate how I sound, this is horrible. And the next day I was practicing in the makeup chair, and the makeup artist heard me and she goes, what are you practicing for? Because I was being Australian. And I said, oh, the scene. She goes, so you're Australian now? I said, yeah, that's what certain producer said. And she's like, that doesn't sound right to me. And she was best buddies with the American producer, so she gets him on the line. He's like, no, we want Chiano to be American through and through. And I'm like, well, you guys want to sort that out. And because I think, you know, when you – and it happens on a lot of shows when, you know, they like you, they want you to stick around, then they want you to sell you to whatever market kind of thing. So it went back and forward like 5 times within that day, and I was a mess. And then they said the Aussie guy won, so it went Australian from episode 15 all the way through to the end of episode series one. and then at the end of series one, the Aussie producer left, and we want Chiano back to America. And I'm like, are you kidding me? So you'll see very clearly from 15 to the end of episode series one that it goes very clearly back and forward. Like, you'll see, they even made me dub over in what they thought the really Aussie words were in American, but it's a different shape of your mouth because Australia, we drop the jaw, and America, you kind of speak with a smile. Everything's like more like that. So, but Australia's like this. So you can quite clearly see it doesn't make any sense. And I'm like just totally traumatized. I said, can you put a note at the end of the episodes that this is not my choice and that you guys were freaking me out? And they're like, no. So, and then from series two onwards, that's my best American. So there's a little inside note for you. But I still watch it now and go, ooh, that's definitely a bit of Australian popping through there.
And it's so funny you say that. So I want to ask the audience, the folks out here. So for me, when I hear, like when I watch somebody on TV and they have an American accent, and then I watch an interview with them and it turns out they've got a British accent or an Australian accent, like it's way sexier for me hearing the foreign accent. Okay, people are nodding. I just want to get this on because I'm recording this audio. People are nodding. Like, so for you, is it the other way? Like, when you hear an American accent, does it sound sexy?
Well,
like,
do I
sound sexy right now is what I'm really asking.
All right, here's my room key.
I didn't know
it was that type of convention. I think because we grow up watching American, everything's American.
Sure.
So I think that we think when we make it big, America is the way to go. There's more opportunities in America. You know, as we grow up on a little island kind of thing, and that's you guys are the big fish. So it's really I think it was interesting because I did Star Trek Continues. And I spoke to Vic, who is an amazing friend and producer. And he goes, I want you to be part of this show. I want you to come on to do a guestie. And that's coming out, I think, in May. And I went, great, great. I said, well, if I'd like to be American because it's Star Trek. And he's like, no, no, no. You have to be Australian because it's Star Trek. I'm like, oh, but no one's going to understand what I'm saying. And he's like, that's why I want you, because I don't think there's ever been an Australian in the history of Star Trek. And they have Daniel Logan, but he's New Zealand, and he was in a couple of episodes before me. And I was like, cool, I'm going to be the first Australian on Star Trek. So then I was like, oi. And he's like, not that Australian.
Right, rein it in.
And I sit there with my bottle of brandy, smoking my cigarette, and, you know, with my dingo. Like, this is like, no. Calm down, lady. So I guess each different character is very different. I love doing all different types of accents. I love it when, like, especially, like, isn't Christian Bale? Where's he from? Or is it, who am I thinking that's got a very, very thick, there's a, or is it, Colin Farrell, is that his name? Mm-hmm. He was in my yoga class the other day, and I totally fangirled out. And as I'm doing downward doggy, I'm like, having a sneak peek, I'm like, oh, there he is. It's quite funny because you guys, you know, have these little star moments, and everyone's the same, you know. I was actually with my dog MacGyver, my 6-year-old golden retriever, who's totally, everyone says he's a bit dumb, but he's not. He's actually super smart, and he's training me. I'm the dumb one because, like, he will not jump into the car. I have to hand carry this huge dog into the car. And all my friends are like, he's such a dumb dog. I'm like, I'm the dumb one. I'm the one that's lifting the bloody dog up into the car. So
yeah, he's trained you well.
He's trained me very well. He gets treats all day long. He's the cutest little thing. I do have photos if you want to see. But and I also have an 18-year-old cat, speaking of cats, who's a nightmare. He's so grumpy, and then I realize why he's so grumpy, because he's the only man that stuck around with me for 19 years. No wonder he's just like, meow! He can't put up with me, and he wakes me up. Like, I had such a nice sleep last night because I there's no cat jumping on my face, because this cat, I swear to God, wakes me up 5 times a night to be fed. Even if there's food in the bowl, he will wake me up, and he will be like, meow, like this, and I'll hide under the covers, and he'll literally come in and find me. And I wake up with this cat like this. I'm like, ah. So,
yeah. I'm just glad when it's the face of the cat that's right here.
Sorry,
because sometimes the cat turns around. You mentioned accents. So can you give us a sample of some other accents?
You
do the Russian accent?
Oh, no. You have to look at my show reel. Then I've got all my accents primed up on there. But I really think my favorite accent to listen to, I think, is Irish. And so sexy, so sexy. Australian, I don't get at all. I think my most, I hope there's no South Africans here, but South African accent I find very awkward. And I also think Leonardo DiCaprio deserves a bloody Oscar. Someone give that man an Oscar. Like, Django was amazing. And then who was he, where is it playing a South African? What was it, in the Blood Diamond? Or he's so good. Such a clever man. So anyway, I don't know how I got onto that. Put in a good accents. Word for me. Yeah, accents.
Very good. Well, let's see. What questions do you guys have? Have anything ready to go for us?
I want to tell you guys about two projects that
please.
I've been involved with. So, sorry, I'm getting over that nasty head cold that everyone in LA has. Where do I start? Okay, so I moved over here officially. I've gone back and forward the past 10 years following work. And about 2 years ago, did the Jim Henson Creature Shock Challenge, the first series. And at that stage, I was in Australia, and I came over just to do the 3-month shoot. And Brian Henson and Sci-Fi said, oh, we love it. It's amazing. Rated top of its, demographic, and it's definitely going to go again. So I moved my dog MacGyver, my cat Louie, on that crazy flight. Everyone came over, and then we waited for a year for the show to get picked up. And I was like, Brian, what is going on? And they said eventually that it wasn't. So I was devastated. Like, it's so tumultuous because you never know how you're going to pay your bills, or where you're going to live, or do you sign a lease, or do you get a car, or how do you exist? So I was at a signing called DragonCon, and I was approached by this awesome, awesome company, and they asked me if I'd like to do this short film called Hashtag. And I was like, yeah, if it's a good script, why not? And I read the script. Amazing. Really, really beautiful. So then I said, how are we going to raise the money for it? And they told me about Kickstarter. I have to cough. Pardon me, just doing my voice warm up. Sorry, listeners. And I was kind of nervous about it because I'd never had to go down that road before. And I said, well, I've always been, you know, I'm a professional actress and I don't want to ask people for money and, you know, these guys have supported me enough. And they said, it's actually really great because people are really getting involved in Kickstarters and crowdfunding and Indiegogo because it's a chance to stay true to your artistic integrity and work with friends and family and fans, and you don't have to be, bow down to the rules and regulations of the big networks and stuff. Even though we love them and it's great working for them, it's nice to be your own boss. So we asked for 40,000 and we got 44,000, which was amazing. And we did this beautiful film called Hashtag, and you can check it out. There's links on my website, which is my name, gigiedgley.com. And then I've got links to Facebook and Twitter through that. So that's in post-production. And then recently I also did a little Indiegogo called Nexus, and it's a really cool story, and that's in post-production as well. So with these two short films, we want to take them around the festival circuit, hopefully get some good credits from them, and then take them back to the public or private investors and say, this is what we can do for 40 grand. Now let's make a full-length feature. Who's up for it? And you guys are going to love it. They're two amazing stories.
That's yeah. I saw
pardon me.
Just a couple pictures of you from Nexus on your website. So very excited to see that. Sounds like sounds like very cool. All right, checking in questions. Yes.
I'm sorry. I
already gave you my cough. Sorry.
No, that's fine. No, but I was with all the Marvel movies and all these huge X-Men, all these things coming out. Do you see yourself ever wondering character you would?
I want to play Tinkerbell. I know that she's not a Marvel one, but I love Tinkerbell. I would love to. I just watched Deadpool and oh my gosh, he's so good. He's so good. Like, I was like grinning from ear to ear the whole time, sitting on the edge of my seat. And as soon as it was over, I'm like, let's see it again. It was so good. And it's very hard, like you think, to emote when you've got that ridiculous mask on, but he does such an amazing job. And then when he doesn't have the mask, he has that full-on prosthetic, which is almost comical, but he pulls, it's phenomenal. He did such a good job. I'm definitely going to see it at least three more times at the big screen, and then I'll get the DVD and burn it. Not burn it like that. I mean, burn it because I watch it so much. Oh, I'd love to. But put in a good word.
And I'll even mention that our podcast is having a big giveaway of Deadpool stuff. So if you stop by our table, you can find out how to register for that. So we're giving away some sweet stuff: the Marvel Collector Box, Deadpool, and a couple other things. So
and I'll also
throw a little plug.
There were only a couple of other characters in there as well, mm-hmm. Were great. The chemistry between all of that cast was awesome.
Yeah, they didn't pull in a ton of other sort of superhero characters, but the ones that they did, they used really effectively in the story to add but not take away from Deadpool, who's the main character in the driving force, I thought. So, yeah.
It was so funny. And then I've been getting into, I love singing as well. So on my site, there's a little link and stuff to stuff I do.
You sing with your brother.
Oh, I miss him so much.
It's such a great song.
He's so cool. My sister just put, he's in Sydney, and I went back over Christmas. He's like, I said, move to LA, and because we used to do like a duo thing, and he's like, move back to Sydney. I was like, we've done Sydney, move to LA, and he's like, well, I've got weddings booked all year. I'm like, come on. And my sister, they were out last night or the night before, and he was singing that magic Coldplay song, and just melts my heart. And she's like, wish you were here. I'm like, shut up. And I reposted it on my page. He was actually on The Voice in Australia. And my sister and I went in to be the support people. And we were the worst support people ever because we're like, oh, my brother. Cry. He's like, get it together, you freaks. I'm like, sorry, babe, but you're just so beautiful. Like this. And people are like, who are these monsters? But, yeah, he's a good boy. He's a good boy. I've got 7 brothers and sisters, so there's a big posse.
Well, and you do need to go see because Gigi has a wonderful singing voice, and it's it's always interesting because I think so many people that we see have all these different talents. I mean, whether, you know, we see them as an actor, but then they also sing and they also dance and write and produce and all these other things. And so it's amazing to see some of those other talents that you've developed over time. So
thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Other questions?
Is it true that, excuse me,
Yeah, I don't know where he came up with that from. Like, it actually, it's funny because people, when I was a kid, used to call me Pip because I was small. And then I'm thinking it's something with Great Expectations, something. But I always get asked that, and I still, someone has to ask Ben. I freaked out because I'm like, how do you know my nickname when I was a kid? How long have you been watching me?
Yeah, I read that same thing. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
I was just curious, what genre of music do you sing, pop or rock?
I love Amy Winehouse, where she's made that like kind of smoky, raspy kind of beauty. She sounds like she's channeling someone, you know, that bluesy, but she's kind of made it modern. I love Ben Harper. I love Lamb, Massive Attack, Bjork. I do everything from like kind of jazzy old school tunes to more like pop dance stuff as well. So yeah, that's sort of where I live.
Any other questions from you guys at this time? Okay, well, then I will continue. I told you I would. When you came on to, you know, Farscape, there was sort of the main crew of the ship. You kind of have these core actors. Was that difficult at first, kind of getting? Because I'm sure they're kind of a team and maybe already kind of close. Was that difficult kind of becoming a part of that group?
Terrifying. Terrifying. And they're also amazing and also welcoming, but I'm terrible in social situations. Like, I'm so awkward and I don't know how to stand or to sit or to talk. I always walk around with my foot in my mouth. The harder I try to be responsible and respectful and, you know, not muck anything up, then I always muck it up. You know, I'm a disaster. So I just thought, well, that's perfect to use for the character because she's a hot mess. You know, she has no idea what she's doing, even though she thinks she does. And that opening scene with the where they're walking Chiana in, and I'm just looking at all the dudes and Aaron and stuff, and that's just me being terrified. Like, all right. How's this going to go down? You know, how can I screw with your minds and your hearts and your souls and really get in there and dive around? So yeah, I like that opening. That's a pretty cool sci-fi opening. What does he say? What are the lines Salah says?
Oh, I wish I could remember. I actually watched the episode just a few days ago, so.
We are transporting a very dangerous criminal or something like that, and then it cuts to her with the handcuffs and, like, checking them out and stuff, and, oh, it's so cool.
Yeah, and she's so, I mean, she's petite.
Hey, boys, get outside. Or get up here and talk. We can't hear. Go on.
So she's.
Get out. So naughty.
I have to do that
men.
In my classroom all the time, so I have to kick the kids in the back of the room out. So, yeah, she's petite, but there's also this caged energy to her that you see, and so you can kind of see there's this juxtaposition of the two parts. How could she be threatening? She's so small, but on the other hand, I'm kind of glad that they've got her cuffed up. Like, that seems like a good call this time.
Yeah, it's funny. In the very first scene with Rigel, where she's like, "Quiet, Toad," and like I'm straddling Rigel. There's like a puppeteer in between my legs, and they had the voice at that time of Rigel wasn't actually coming from Rigel. It was coming from the assistant director on the side of set. So even though I'm looking at Rigel, and then you've got all these puppeteers in between your legs and working his hands and all that stuff. The voice was coming from over here, so I'm like, "Quiet, Toad," and he talks back to me, but it's someone talking over there, and I'm like, and they're like, no, keep looking. And then as the series went on, we got a microphone in Rigel, and or the puppeteer who was working him would use the voice. But I love those creatures. They're amazing.
Was that it had to be a big adjustment. I mean, I would assume that you probably hadn't worked with puppets before.
No, nothing like that. Like, you know, you look at those creatures and they've got more spark in their soul than some people that you meet, you know. It's quite unnerving. And when you saw them on the side of set and they weren't animated, or, you know, someone wasn't inside them bringing them to life, it was very full on, because it looks like when we did the Creature Shop Challenge, I saw Rigel and they brought him out of a box and he looked dead. It was horrible because he had, like, his skin was all moldy and he had bits missing, and I just looked at him like and burst into tears, and Brian Henson standing with me like, get it together. I'm like, oh, Rigel. And it was just bizarre because you've had so many journeys with this creature, you know. It's like a family member, a stiff in a box. It's just weird. And it was pretty cool to see him again, though. And in that episode of Creature Shop Challenge, I said, please, 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 please let me be Tiana so I can go in there. And I don't want to be a host. I'm an actress like this. I want to be me, and I want to get in there and play with the designers and stuff. And they actually did look into getting Tiana's costume together and everything, and apparently he couldn't get it all done in time, and for someone to do the makeup as well, like, that makeup is so intense. It took 3.5 hours every day over the 5 years, so we had to find someone who could replicate it. And Brian said, if you are Tiana, we'll have you saying the challenge as Tiana. I'm like, no, have me in the challenge working with the creatures and really mucking with them and stuff like that. And he's like, oh, what have I created? Just be a host.
Didn't want to give you that much rope.
No.
Well, I'm sure for Brian Henson, you know, seeing a puppet sitting there is no big deal. But yeah, I can see that. I think it's, you know, with people with dolls and things like that, I mean, they almost kind of take on their own life for people. They kind of fill them with this personality. And for you, seeing and just staring into that face all the time, it just does, I can imagine, I can see how it could become very, very real.
Yeah, it's beautiful, beautiful creatures, you know. And it was exciting because when you read the script, like I was speaking to people before earlier today, is like with the Creature Shop Challenge, I was reading the script and it says, you know, you've got to create a creature that's, you know, from the junkyard or from, you know, nothing within 2 days. You're like, how are they going to do this? And the same thing would kind of happen, pardon me, on Farscape, where you look at it and you go, tomorrow we visit a new planet and we're on a new spaceship and we're meeting a new life form. Like, how cool is this? And I'd rock up and you didn't even need to act. You just reacted to all the cool costumes, makeups, prosthetics, props. Like, it was insane. It was like being a kid in a candy store, you know. I was 23-ish, and every actor that I looked up to and respected within the industry wanted to be on Farscape because it wasn't a cops and robbers show. It wasn't lawyers and doctors and nurses. You could be a creature. So, you know, people that would rock up. And when I'm Tiana, I'm so much more brave because, you know, she's sexy and she's got, you know, the look and the costume and everything sucked in and pulled up and whatever. And the people would come to set, and people that I idolise, and I'd be like, hey, and try and, like, keep my cool and stuff. And, you know, I'd teach them how to fly the spaceship or work with Rigel. I was going to tell you this story, a fangirl moment. So I was in my local coffee shop and I bumped into the guy from Entourage, you know, the really spunky guy, the main guy. I don't know his name, Adrian someone.
I'm not sure, but I know who you're talking about.
Anyway, my sister is a big, big fan and I think he's pretty hot too. So I'm there getting my coffee and I see he's sitting there with two young ladies and I'm just like being a weirdo. And I'm like, I've got to get a photo with him so I can show my sister and rub it in her face. And I went, okay, how am I going to do this? And this is how crazy I am. I'm actually thinking through how I'm going to coerce him into having a photo because I'm so nervous. I'm like, I've just got to be really casual about it, you know. So I go to the walkout. My dog was with me, MacGyver. And I go, what I'll do is, he was facing outside the window. Everyone loves my dog. So what I'll do is I'll walk past the window with my dog and, morning, you're late. Now I have to start from the beginning. Well, when I was 3, everyone's like, no. So anyway, so then I walked with my dog I had my coffee, I was being all cool, and I was walking with my dog MacGyver, and then MacGyver, I don't even notice, is off the leash because my hands are so sweaty. The leash came out of my hand, and I'm now running out down the street. Coffee's going everywhere. I'm like, MacGyver! MacGyver! And I never got the photo with him. I was just too embarrassed after that to go and ask for a photo. My plan did not work. So if you ever have those weird fangirl, fanboy moments, don't worry, we all have them.
It's interesting that you say that, because you've said a couple of times earlier that you didn't always feel as a kid like you totally fit in. Mm. And then, you know, we hear you say, oh, I'm wondering how I'm going to go talk to him. And because I'm like, for the guys, like I'm sitting here going, just come on, like anytime, just come on up and talk. Like it's weird for me to hear you say things like that, because I think for us, we look and we see this beautiful, confident, well-spoken. Well, I wasn't going to mention that, but right, that's difficult to see at first glance. But this beautiful, confident person, and so it's interesting to say that, because I think the way you I can see somebody seeing you at your table and going, okay, what am I going to say when I go up and talk to GGX? Okay, and then I'm going to say this, and then she's going to say this, and then I'm going to do this, and then she's going to punch me in the face, and then no, okay, go back.
Just sneeze and cough all over me. You're like, oh, I got the DNA.
We can clone GG.
Watch out. Ooh, one's hard enough to deal with. Yeah, I think we're all like that, and I've got to remind myself when I go into the big meetings and stuff, and you go, look, you're either going to get the job or you're not going to get the job, and the more you have to, you know, we make up these big stories in our heads about, and we put people on pedestals and stuff. Like, I think also, I've got to tell you, when I, about, oh, how many years ago? 6 years ago, I think, I was in LA and I ran out of money because it was around the writer's strike, was it about 6 years ago? Anyway, so I moved once again to LA. And I shot this film called Nobody Knows, which is, you can check it out online for free. And it's about an experience I actually had on Farscape. And then I'm such a pedantic, everything has to be perfect, perfect, perfect. So I spent every last cent on this film, co-directing it and working on it. And I ran out of money. And I said to my partner at the time, look, I don't know what to do. I've got to go back to Australia because I think I can get a job back home on Home and Away or Neighbours, because people know me back home. I've done a lot of work, and I walk into an audition room and they're super polite and super lovely, and they go, oh, you know, sheesh, here's the character, and oh, yeah, that was kind of good, but maybe do it this way. Whereas here in America, you walk in and there's like 30 other girls that look just like you but better, you know, and it's so nerve-wracking and it's quite unraveling, you know. And you kind of walk in, and a lot of places don't like to shake your hand. Like, it's really awkward. And I'm just a doofus, you know. I'm like, oh, hi, I'm Gigi, you know, like this. And they're like, no, we don't shake hands. I'm like, oh, here's my bio, like this. And, no, we don't need your bio, like this. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I go, so should I do the scene? They're like, well, the camera's already rolling. I'm like, you know. So it's a very awkward process. So I ran out of cash, and my partner was like, well, the whole reason why you moved to the States is to tell cool stories and to find that perfect job. So why don't you become part of my show until you get your next big job? And I was like, I am not being part of your show. He was a street performer. And I was like, I'm a professional actress. I will not perform on the streets. So the next day I was there in my roller skates with my fire sticks, and I was crying. I'm like, you know, two years later, and I did that for 2 years, and to be quite honest with you, it was the two of the best years of my life, because we had nothing, like we only had just enough money to get by, but I'd been so well looked after in the early days with Farscape and several other Australian television shows, and then to have all that abundance on, you know, financially, and, you know, with all the energy and all the being so well looked after, to having nothing and literally going around to the Edinburgh Festival, performing in Australia, performing in LA, and street performing, and getting back to the grassroots of what this business is about, and entertaining people and telling stories. It was amazing. And there's no television screen to protect you, so you could hear all the drunkard comments, and you could hear the kid going, she's boring, or you could hear the whatever, you know, and you'd have to find a way to work with them, and it was really cool. So that was a huge blessing. And I think it's good for you guys to know that too, is that, you know, you always see us in these beautiful, you know, shows and all that kind of stuff. But it's a very big roller coaster ride, and everyone's got to pay their bills, and everyone's got to find a way to manifest the next new job. So, and then straight after that, I emailed my audition for Rescue Special Ops, which was the show with the, I was, you know, leading lady on that for 3 seasons. So it just is like this my whole life. It's identity crisis.
That's wonderful. Any wrap-up questions here? Yeah.
Did Farscape, because it was a sci-fi program, change the nature of what was marketable or fashionable in Australian television?
Australia didn't know how to take it. It was weird because two different channels, networks, fought over the the show, and then the people that ended up buying it off the other channel, they put us on against the Olympics, and then they put us on against the cricket, and they're the two biggest things that Australia has, and then they marathoned us because they didn't know what to do with is it Muppets in Space? Is it? It's a bit raunchy. It's a bit. We don't know what to do with it. So it was surreal because we were literally working in the first season was in Fox Studios, which is like a proper professional soundstage, air conditioning, beautiful trailers, the whole thing. And then on the second season, from the second season on, they moved us an hour out of town, and we shot in warehouses, no air conditioning, no soundstage, everything was dubbed over. Aliens were dropping left, right and centre because of the heat or the cold or the whatever. If it rained, which it does a lot in Australia, we had tin roofs, you couldn't hear a bloody thing. Like, I think it would be funny for you guys to come to see the. I mean, we were still very well looked after. Amazing crew, amazing cast, amazing everything. But now people make huge multi-million dollar productions for, you know, it's a lot of smoke and mirrors, you know. A couple of times Dargo actually went to hospital because he overheated. And I was just, not to be rude to Anthony because I love him so much, but imagine seeing that guy rock up with all his prosthetics on into the hospital. Like, what do we even do with this? So our very first convention, they flew us business class. They did our hair and makeup. We all came to America, and we came out on stage, and we had no idea that so many people watched the show, because in Australia, it was nothing. And it was a creation convention, and we looked out, and I'm kidding you, it was not kidding you. And someone showed me a photo, and there was a photo of Gianna, Crichton, and Zan, and someone else up in Times Square. And I was 23, and I'm like, what? I got goosebumps. Like, what? We didn't know, because we were sort of in this bubble down under shooting it. So that was pretty cool to go, oh my gosh, this thing that these characters and these creatures and these stories that we love and live and breathe have reached so many people, because we honestly didn't know. Like, and the internet wasn't really, there was a couple of like little chat rooms around then, but it wasn't like it is today. There's no Facebook or Twitter or anything. So that was pretty cool. And no one knew who I was, because no one could tell because of the makeup. I went and I didn't sound necessarily like her as well. And people were like, you really, Gianna? I'm like, yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, everybody, let's give Gigi Edgley a warm round of applause.
Thank you, guys. Love you. Thanks for having me.
And you can get your picture with Gigi. You can get...
You can get a flu off me.
That's true, too. That's an option. That's 10 extra dollars.
I pay you and then to take my flu away. Oh, I'm so sorry, guys.
You can get an autograph of pictures. So she'll be there today and tomorrow. And then also, you're going to be back in Kansas City in coming up in May at Planet Comic Con.
Yeah. I'm stalking you guys. Now I'm the creeper.
I think everybody here is you can creep on us. So Gigi, thank you so much, and thanks
you,
everybody,
John,
for coming. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.